The views and opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WEFT-FM, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And now here is this week's edition of IMC Radio News.
Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, Ariel Clemenzi talks to Jessica Popovac about her experiences in Guatemala and the ongoing struggle for social justice there. And Sarah Canals collects a community Christmas card for President Bush. Stay tuned.
Had a dream that I was flying as I slept beneath your star. Like an arrow from Orion to the cold red heart of Mars.
IMC reporter Ariel Clemenzi spoke with Jessica Popovac, a community activist who has been living in Guatemala for several years, and speaks of her experiences there and the situation facing that country's people.
I'm sitting here in the Illinois terminal with Jessica Popovac, who has recently returned from Guatemala.
Hi.
Who are you working with down in Guatemala primarily?
Well, when I first got down there a few years ago, I worked with NISCA, which is the Network in Solidarity with the People of Guatemala, and they try to coordinate accompaniment of human rights defenders and of witnesses to the genocide that happened in Guatemala in the early 80s. And I worked with them for about a year as an accompanier in an indigenous Mayan community where they suffered a massacre just 7 years ago, and accompanied witnesses to trial and lived among the community and heard their stories about the massacres and the violence and the oppression that they had suffered. And then this past year, I've been working with an organization called Rights Action. After living in this community of returned refugees in Guatemala and recognizing the systematic oppression and exploitation of their poverty that was happening to a large extent at the hands of not only corrupt officials and businessmen within Central America, but completely being taken advantage of by actors in the North and the U.S. Corporations and to a large extent our as a result of our foreign policy, I decided that I wanted to become more active and do something more active in the city with organizations working against that structure. And so I've been working with an organization called Rights Action for the past year. And what we do is we try to support local indigenous campesino and popular struggles in Central America by channeling funds from organizations and foundations in the North to Central America, and then trying to channel information about their struggles to the activists in the North. And we do that in a number of ways. We organize speaking tours for Central American activists to come up to the U.S. and Canada and share their experiences and their stories, and make connections with activists in the North. And then we also organize delegations of people in the North working on specific projects or, you know, involved in certain topics and who want to come down to Central America and learn more about those specific issues to be able to come down and meet people working in that on the ground. So that's what I've been doing. And I've been mostly writing for them and doing speaking tours with activists from that region, from Guatemala and Honduras, and accompanying the struggle of popular and indigenous and campesino movements in that region.
And you said that you'd been down there for about 3 years?
Two and a half, yeah, give or take.
Has the situation changed much at all in that time?
Yeah, it has to a certain extent. But, you know, it depends on what country we're talking about. I've been living mostly in Guatemala, and there the situation has changed. There's kind of two things happening simultaneously. One is that Guatemala's been working on the peace process, and they've been doing a lot of work collecting evidence for a genocide case that is going to be brought against Rios Montt, General Efrain Rios Montt, and Lucas Garcia, two of the military dictators during the 80s. And so they've been exhuming numerous mass graves in the countryside. A lot of people have been working on gathering forensic evidence, eyewitness accounts of the violence that happened there in the early 80s. The peace accords were signed in 1996, although a lot of the structural, economic, social, and political disparity that caused these movements to grow hasn't been addressed. It's all outlined in the peace accords, but very few of the peace accords have actually been followed through with. And one of the main things that people are working on right now, something very concrete and that they feel needs to happen before any of these changes can take place, is that the people need to find justice for what happened. They need their suffering to be acknowledged. You know, there's a large effort right now to collect that evidence. There's a lot of people working on that. And so, but the people who were in power during these atrocities are still in power in Guatemala. So there's simultaneously, there's been that movement, which is very hopeful and very positive, but there's also been a lot of repression, a lot of efforts to silence people. And that has increased significantly since I first arrived in Guatemala a few years ago. Because the genocide case has been gaining momentum and they've been gaining more evidence, so there's been a simultaneous wave of repression and violence and intimidation against lawyers and witnesses and forensic anthropologists. So that's been one way that things have changed. Another way is that with the expansion of trade liberalization, as it's called, there's an increase in development projects which are promoted by international or financing institutions such as the World Bank and the IMF, which are top-down development projects. They're projects that are initiated with the sole purpose of facilitating the shipment of goods, the extraction of natural resources, and the exploitation, really, of the poverty that exists in Guatemala. There's more sweatshops now than there were before, where people and more people are being moved off of their land in rural areas and into urban areas where they have no choice but to work at these sweatshops for next to nothing. And right now, this is the most significant thing that people in the north can be working on and trying to halt as much as possible until methods of sustainable development are put on the table and ways to foster bottom-up development that serves the needs of the communities is proposed and taken seriously, really, by those in who have the power to initiate such change. That's another thing that Rights Action works on a lot, is trying to, you know, the main thing that we look for funding for beyond, you know, this kind of exchange of information and support of organizations working on these struggles against free trade initiatives and against top-down development. We try to foster, create a space where people can bring community-initiated development projects to us, and then we, you know, look at them and analyze them for the benefit that they would bring to the community at whole, and the way that they would support a healthy community, and try to, you know, as much as possible, distribute funds directly to communities so that they can initiate projects that serve their needs as human beings instead of serving the needs of the major corporations and businesses that come into these areas.
Did you personally face any forms of, like, oppression, or did you see this in people's daily lives, like how this played out, or were you personally affected by it?
I think that the main thing that I've witnessed is just economic violence. They're in all of Central America, 3 out of every 5 people live in poverty, and 2 out of 5 people live in extreme poverty, which means that they don't have enough food to eat. They don't have, you know, they're malnourished. They're starving, and they don't have basic amenities like running water, you know, a roof over their heads. And it's a very dire situation, and it's one that is in need of immediate attention instead of exploitation, which is what we're seeing right now. And that's something that our current administration is very strongly trying to not just kind of gloss over, but expand. They're right now trying to expand these free market policies in Guatemala, which have only served to increase poverty, have only served to increase the gap between rich and poor in Central America. And right now, CAFTA, the Central America Free Trade Agreement, is being negotiated as we speak in Washington, D.C., and this is something that will only remove what little safeguards there are right now for people to have the right to organize into labor unions to push for a fair wage, to use what few laws exist to protect their environment and protect human rights in these countries.
Is there much organizing going on in Guatemala and in Central America in general to confront CAFTA?
Yes, there is. There's a huge amount, and it's so sad that in this country, not only does none of that make news, but we're not even talking about CAFTA. Nobody knows. Even a lot of people in the activist community aren't aware that this is it's the expansion of NAFTA into all of Central America, and it's just a stepping stone to the FTAA, or the Free Trade of the Americas. And it's very real, and it's very urgent, and they're supposedly in the final rounds of negotiations this week. And if they are able to come up with the agreement as they would like it to look, it's going to have to pass through Congress by summer, and it's going to be something that we're going to have to mobilize immensely around if we're going to be able to halt it, because it's something that is, it's not only going to exploit these poor conditions in Central America, but it's going to make them attractive to industry here in the U.S. And kind of create this, what people are calling the race to the bottom, where thousands, hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs are going to go to down to Central America to exploit the lack of labor and environmental standards down there, or the lack of enforcement of the standards. Mm-hmm.
So when you say that we will need to mobilize, you mean people in the north just as much as people in the south?
Oh, completely, because it's our government that's pushing for this. You know, this CAFTA is George Bush's baby. He came up with it. He's pushing for it. They're pulling the strings and pressuring the Central American governments to conform and to sign, and threatening them with reducing trade and things like that. And that's a distinction that I think I should make. It's not trade that is bad. Trade is natural. It's been going on for years. It's the rules of the game that we are currently playing under that aren't working. They've been proven not to work for anyone. It only serves the very rich and the very powerful. And the people on both sides of the border are going to suffer immensely.
IMC reporter Sarah Knaus brings us the following Christmas card to President Bush.
My name is Sarah Knaus. I'm really not too excited about Christmas usually. I don't enjoy shopping, don't have kids, don't send cards, and live a few thousand miles away from my family. But a few weeks ago, I began wondering what it would look like if the people in my community sent a holiday message to George Bush. Last week, I took my camera around town and caught my friend's messages on video, edited it, and sent it to the White House in time for Christmas Day. Here's what my community had to say.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light.
President Bush, my name is Amy Rickman, and I'm a resident of Urbana, Illinois. And on this holiday card to you, I'd like to send you well wishes for peace on earth and goodwill towards everyone. And I'd like to see our country start to reflect that.
Mr. Bush, I'd like you to keep your friends in mind this season. People have stuck with you, done things for you, been around when you need them the most. Friends like Ken Lay, Catherine Harris.
My kids are learning about communities at their grade school. They're in first and second grade. And they learn about the small community and the bigger community and the bigger community and how they all work together. And when they got up to the community of sort of national and international, they started talking about, they started applying the same questions in first and second grade of how does the community take care of itself. And their end result was, Daddy, the world community doesn't really take care of itself. It keeps fighting each other. And it was really depressing to me. So if there would be one thing I could give them for Christmas or in the next several years, it would be that the world community takes care of itself. And as one of the really big bullies in the world community, if you could work to make that happen, I'd be really appreciative.
My message on Christmas is that we should all remember that giving a gift is something that should happen for the receiver, not necessarily the giver. And in that vein, we should remember that these contracts, the rebuilding contracts, we shouldn't be fighting over them with France or Germany or any other country like that, because we shouldn't be picking them to begin with. The Iraqi people need to pick those things, and if we give any contracts now, they should expire at the time that sovereignty is returned to them, and they should pick those companies according to what they think will help rebuild their country the most, and we should not have undue influence in that choice.
Hello, Mr. President. I just wanted to wish you happy holidays and hope that you keep in mind all the people that you've waged war against in this world, including the Americans that no longer have collective bargaining rights, people that are being stripped of their overtime pay, all the people that have been lied to about the Iraq War, and as always, the Iraqi citizens who are living in squalor because of your disastrous policies. Here we are
in olden days. I want to send a message for you, Mr. President. A message of love. And I want you to, in this, especially in this season, to think about what the economic policies of the United States affecting Latin America. I will like to ask you to think about the thousands of illegal migrant people, the so-called illegal migrant people in the United States, the people which don't have documents and they need to work. Think about them, think about their families. What do you do when they're so hungry? What do you do when you are so desperate? You try to change things. So, change it. You can do it. You can be more compassionate. So that's what I would like to ask you in this time. Put in practice your compassion. Put in practice your love for family, for children. And do something today for the future.
George Bush, I am angry at you. I am angry at what you are doing with the power that you have in this country. Some of the things that you've done that have made me exceptionally angry have to do with the passing of the Patriot Act and this terrible, terrible war in Iraq. And sometimes I get just paralyzed by my anger. That's how angry I am.
I'd like to wish you a Merry Christmas, your family as well. I had a pretty good idea. I was thinking that maybe you folks could visit Miami, a city that you just gave $8.5 million in stimulation to, spent on such great consumer goods as tear gas and rubber bullets and pepper spray. And I'm sure that the folks in Miami would love to have you there. And while you're there, maybe you could install some of those great Diebold electronic voting machines to make it that much easier for folks in your town to vote for you. I think that'll make your holiday season enjoyable and make you have a great great election year next year.
Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more.
George Bush, I don't actually have much to tell you,
because the people I really want to talk to are the people who believe you. Because if no one believed you, then you wouldn't have power, and therefore I wouldn't have to interact with you, which is my preference. But since you do have power currently, I have one thing to say to you, which is, who are your constituents? The people of the United States of America, or the corporations of the United States of America? And the last thing I have to say to you is, you're going to be out in 2004, and I'm going to work like hell to make sure that happens.
Okay, President Bush, this is the letter that I wrote to you. My name is Sevilla, and I live in Urbana, Illinois. In my letter, it says that I don't really know why I should speak to you, because I think that you're a dishonest person, and you don't know how to listen, and I don't think you really care a lot about what I have to say, but I guess I would still like to go on record to you saying that it seems obvious to me that your policies are doing terrible, terrible damage to America's position in the rest of the world, and it makes me shudder and afraid for what my generation will have to face if your administration continues to clumsily flex its military muscle all around the world for no good reason. What gives me hope is the widespread grassroots movement against your presidency. I look forward to voting against you in my first ever presidential election, and now you know where I stand.
George Bush, I want you to know that I detest how you and your policies have robbed people of control over their own lives and bodies. You've caused thousands to lose their lives in the Middle East while simultaneously robbing women in the U.S. and throughout the world of control over our reproductive decisions. I, like many other women, will not forget the ban that you signed on partial birth abortion, nor the appointments you made of many anti-choice judges, nor the global gag rule that you and your goons instated. And we will see to it that you are not to remain in the White House, because women's rights and human rights are eroding under your rule.
Bush, I would just like to let you know that through your example, I've seen how presidency should not go. I find you really dishonest, and you have a lot of really mixed up ideas about things, and I hope that voters can see what I've seen and that it influences their presidential vote of 2004. Thank you.
Mr. Bush, I'm sorry to bring you to the office today, but I've got this letter I want you to read here. There'll be a separation package. We'll be writing to you about it. I want you to turn in your keys, your pager, all that stuff. Good knowing you. Have a good time. Have a great life. See you.
If the office of the president still had much respect left attached to it by virtue of its title, I feel like you've shredded the last bit of respect that many people have had for the presidency. I don't feel respect for you. When you were appointed to the office, because of course you weren't elected to the office, when you were appointed and your people were putting a good spin on what you did down in Texas of bringing various groups together, I had hopes that that would be the case. Of course, that has not turned out to be the case. So I feel that you've ruined any respect that the presidency had left attached to it. I don't know actually anybody that respects you. I don't feel like you're looking out for the best interests of this country. I feel like you're throwing away all of our values of democracy, freedoms. You just don't seem to have any respect for them at all. When our democracy is set to rights again, when this is a free country once again, and the truth is recorded about you, it will not be kind, because you have shown very little concern for the real needs of this country. You have not made it stronger. You have made it weaker. It's hard for me to sincerely wish you any kind of happy holidays, so I don't want to be insincere. I hope your family has a happy holiday, but I hope that some of what we think of as the spirit of Christmas somehow finds its way into your being, and that some light or understanding seeps into you.
George, Mike, and I want you to listen to the heart, from the heart, because now as someone that has grown up with less than you or individuals of that you seem to take care of. You're not thinking of all the people. Basically, you have a lot of power, and please step down.
This is supposed to be for Christmas time, and Christmas is, it's a religious holiday. I'm not a Christian, and I don't claim to be one. So I guess you and I have one of those things in common. But if you ever wanted to try to really be a Christian, George, you might look at one of those cheesy little bumper stickers that lots of people have on their cars these days and say, what would Jesus do? I think in your situation, the answer is not obvious, but there are a few answers that it's definitely not. Murder innocent people is not the answer to that question.
This is a poem that I wrote in response to the events of September 11th. It's called I Am a Terrorist. I am a terrorist. I am a college student, an opponent of the death penalty, whose dorm room door bears a poster of George W. Bush as the Grim Reaper. The FBI is questioning me about whether I have maps of Afghanistan. I am a member of a radical Islamic group in Britain, banned for being, quote, anti-democratic, unquote, excepted from freedom of association through a bizarre logic that practices what it preaches against. I am a lawyer from the ACLU being asked by Fox News whether I agree with U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft that civil libertarians are aiding terrorists by eroding, quote, unity, unquote. The pundit shouts me down before I can get my sound bites out. I am a pacifist on a college campus, ridiculed by my peers for not appreciating the horror of September 11th, as if somehow the only way to appreciate it is by killing. You who claim a share of this, quote, unity, unquote, and enjoy the benefits of U.S.-sponsored terror, blissed out under a patriotic media smokescreen, which only reports U.S. casualties, shall I refuse to distinguish among you? Shall I question you about your possible involvement in the U.S. killings in Panama? Should I ban your fundamentalist Christian prayer groups because your ideas resemble Ashcroft's? Should I accuse you of not appreciating the horrors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki? How should I distinguish between what you stand for and fascism?
Through the years, we all will be together. If the fates allow.
That wraps up IMC Radio News. Contributors included Ariel Clemenzi and Sarah Canals. If you'd like to get involved with the show, please drop us a line at radio@ucimc.org or call 344-8820 extension 1. No experience is necessary. Take care and see you next week. And Charlotte and Kate say,
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.